Three, two, one. What is up? It's another episode of Sacktown Talks with your host, Jabron Maciel. As a reminder, stop looking for the host you want. Love the host you got. That's me. It's another episode. And we have with us Shelby Elias, introduced by our mutual friend, Andy Young.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Do you always roll like this? Are you always this fine?
This is how I roll.
Man, you look good, man.
Thanks.
You came in, I was like, oh man, I gotta put on like a collared shirt or something. I usually just do these in a t-shirt.
Right on.
I like it. I like the schnaz, you know.
Cool.
Very cool. Hey, so you you've done pretty well for yourself in the real estate game.
Yes.
So I was hoping to just have you on, talk about where we are in real estate in 2000, you know, kind of wrapping up 2017. What is 2018 in real estate, mm-hmm. home affordability, rent going to look like in Sacramento? And then just kind of overlay that with a discussion on sort of your own personal success story.
Great.
Yeah. So you were just telling me, before I cut you off, I was like, hey, this is a good story. Let's just do it on the podcast. Yeah. So you're just telling me how you got started in college.
Yeah.
You're a Sac State guy.
Yep, Sac State guy. So I got into real estate. Really, I stumbled upon it. I'm from a small town, Manteca, California.
Do you know Brian Berry?
I don't.
Okay. So no. That's my one Manteca guy.
Right on. Sorry. So now you got two.
Okay, cool.
So I'm originally from Manteca. I grew up on 5 acres, total country boy. And, you know, I said, I want to be a businessman. I want to go away to college. I originally moved to San Diego, had a little bit too much fun, came back to Sac State. And that's where I ended up finishing up. While I was in college, I joined a fraternity. And in the fraternity, there was some guys, they kind of partnered you up with mentors.
Oh, cool.
And my mentor was heavily into real estate. When he gave me his card, it was literally like I got Willy Wonka's golden ticket, because I knew this guy was a multimillionaire. He was totally crushing it in real estate. And I remember going back to my mom, I was like 18 years old, and I'm like, this is it. You know, I got this guy's business card. He's successful. He's a millionaire. First millionaire I ever met. And I blew that guy up. I mean, I called him like once a week, over and over and over. And he's like looking at me kind of like, really, kid? Like, I know I signed up to be your mentor, but it's kind of like a gag, you know, we're in a fraternity. Like, I'm out of college. And one day he invited me out. Yeah, I'm like, no, really. This is my shot. You know, like you are my mentor and you're going to mentor me. And, you know, I just kept blowing him up, and he's like, look, you got to graduate college. And one day he hit me up and he said, look, if you want to come and work for me, I need you to quit your job. You quit your job. I was working at the Cheesecake Factory at the time. And quit your job and then come and see me. So I quit my job. I called him. I said, look, I quit my job and I'm coming to work for you. And he was blown away. And at that point, I went to work for him. I worked at one of the largest lenders in all of California. And I rose to number 3 in the entire company under him.
Okay. And so, you were a loan officer?
I was a loan officer, yes.
Okay.
And then at that point, I mean, the industry was completely booming. And it's crazy because I was number 3 in the company, and I don't even really think that I fully understood what I was even doing at that point.
Okay.
I just worked harder than everybody else.
Okay.
You know, and that was the sheer reality of things, was just my work ethic was unmatched. I mean, I worked 7 to 7 every single day. Yeah. If I wasn't going to hit my goals, I worked on Saturdays. And when that company went out of business, this was probably 2005, 2006, company went out of business and I was number 3. So I had a whole, you know, plethora of guys that were looking at me like, where are you going to go? What are you going to do? And I decided to open up my own company. So I opened up my own company probably in the worst time in history. You know, the market was in shambles.
That's MTG.
United Wholesale Lending.
Okay.
Yep. So I partnered with some other guys in the Bay Area, opened up my mortgage company, and you know, it was a blessing in disguise because other companies were going out of business. We were able to recruit their best, you know, guys from their sales staff, and we just started putting together our company. And at that point, we started supplementing our income by going to the auction and buying properties at the courthouse steps.
Okay.
And started flipping some homes. And it was a great time to get into flipping homes.
So the recession actually kind of came in like a tidal wave and cleared out all the posers.
It did.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, at that point you had to be creative, and my age, it really helped me because I didn't know any better.
How'd you get creative to get through the recession?
So we didn't stick with just home loans. I mean, we were doing anything that we could to stay afloat, you know? So, I mean, we were looking into doing short sales and real estate transactions, and we were doing flip houses, you know, we were buying rental properties, and we were just doing anything that we could, just being as creative as possible to create new avenues. And really, I think that that's where my age kind of came into play, because I didn't know any better, you know? Yep. A lot of the guys that were used to being successful, they're a little bit older, they were kind of pouting, you know? They were like, I'm worth more than this.
My old business model's gone. What am I going to do?
Exactly. That's exactly it. So you know, for a young guy, it was like, there's so much opportunity out here. I can do anything. And I also got lucky, too, because I didn't buy any homes before. You know, I was too young. I couldn't even get into a nightclub at that point. So there, I wasn't blowing any money, you know?
Right. You weren't leveraged at that point.
Yeah. I remember calling my mom saying, Mom, look, you know, when I got my first check, I'm like, I just made $7,500. And she's like, what? You made $7,500?
Doing what?
Yeah. Like, what are you doing? And I'm like, man, I started working for that guy. Remember, he told me to quit my job. And she's like, wait, you quit your job? And, you know, it was crazy. Yeah. But
wait, so what did he have you doing exactly?
So really, I worked on a team called Portfolio Retention. Okay. It was retaining all of our current customers.
Okay.
And we were refinancing them. And people were refinancing for, you know, anything. I mean, people were refinancing at the time to buy a new Corvette, you know. Everybody was refinancing, just trying to use the equity. Yeah, yeah. I mean, things were climbing like crazy. Everybody was investing in real estate, and the home values were going up so high that everybody wanted to use that equity. And they were paying off credit cards. They were taking cash out to remodel. They were
That was the time when everyone had a Louis Vuitton purse on the home equity card. Wells Fargo was doing home equity line of credit cards.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's just deeply, deeply sick, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Did you have a sense at that time, like, hey, this has got to come down?
Yes, and that was the reason why my mentor actually... that he told me, hey, quit your job and come on board, because
this is it.
I know that this thing is going down. This ship is the window's only going to be open for so long, and I would feel guilty if you've been beating down my door for the last year and you didn't have an opportunity to come in here and make some money.
Yeah, it's like you're like the starving child outside and they got loaves of bread and cheesecake and a big pantry full of food. You're like, let me in.
That's right. I mean, I knew he was doing really well, and he was a young guy himself. And, you know, I was just so persistent that it paid off.
What is sort of like the professional portfolio of a loan officer look like? What exactly do you guys do?
So basically, a loan officer in today's world is a lot different than it was back then.
Was that as a consequence of the reforms that came in after?
Correct.
That?
Okay. Yep. So now it's a completely different job. And that's why I say
less money in it now?
I didn't really know what I was doing back then.
Okay.
I did, but it was so easy to do a loan back then. You know, you just you filled out an application, ran your credit. If you had good credit, you got a loan. Now it's a totally different ball game. So now what we do is we actually we meet with our clients and we assess what your goals are. We look into your financial situation and we find you a loan that makes the most sense. For how long that you're going to be staying in the home, what your comfort zone is. We look into your employment information and we make sure that you've been at your job for a certain amount of time. We make sure that your bonus income is secure. We make sure that we average the last 2 years of your self-employed income to make sure that it's stable.
So that you're not getting in over your head.
Exactly. Yep. And right. That's...
Because you're on the line too.
Yes.
And in doing that, you're doing them a favor because you're making sure, you know, everyone
exactly
hopes, you know, like infinite wants, right? Hopes.
Once they go out there and they start looking at homes and they see what their price range is or what they thought they wanted to spend, they always bump it up.
Push me for a little bit more.
Yeah, they're like, well, you remember how I told you initially that I only wanted my payment at $1,800? Now...
25.
Well, I think I could really do $2,300. What does that look like?
Yeah. Get me into the nice school district.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a... I'd read somewhere like America is really full of rich people. There's no middle class.
Mm-hmm.
It's really full of rich people and poor people pretending not to be poor.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, this, given like some historical context with regards to, you know, 08, 09, I remember a guy I worked with was losing his home.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, he was so upset. He's like, I ripped out the banisters. I took the tile off the wall. I took all the appliances. You know, it was deeply troubling for a lot of people, right? What are you seeing in 17, 18? We're back to these prices.
Yeah.
Right? Does it keep going up and up and up? Is there a correction? Is Sacramento uniquely suited among other, like, is Sacramento sort of like a different type of market than what's going on in the rest of California, and we can keep going up and up and up because we've sort of found our stride as a city?
Yeah.
What are you seeing?
So Sacramento is absolutely on fire. I really believe in the city. When I first came to college here, it has all of the right parameters to become a really cool city, and I don't think anyone really understood why it hasn't, and now we're just making massive strides in the right direction. So I'm very excited about where the city is going. But as far as I hear a lot, well, I'm going to hold off and I'm going to wait to buy because I think that prices are going to go down, which I don't see that coming anytime soon. I think that 2018 is going to keep rocking. Last year, I think we saw between 8 and 9% growth, which is solid.
Phenomenal.
But I don't know if necessarily we're going to see that type of growth. But I think that we will continue to move up. The reason being is because, like I mentioned back in the day, we were doing home loans for people that shouldn't be getting those loans. And now we have really strict criteria. And people are qualifying for these homes. You know, they it's strict. You know, they're not being pushed to buy homes that they can't afford. Everyone can afford all of those homes. And that's where everything all started before when everything crashed, was because we were giving loans to people that shouldn't have received those loans.
So this sort of price surge isn't being fueled by unsustainable practices like the last one. This is like a true surge in demand.
For interest rates are low, so it still makes sense.
Right.
Rents are high, so it still makes sense to purchase these homes, even though the price looks like it's high, because interest rates are so low, it still makes sense. Right. So it's this perfect mixture of, you have higher prices, but you have lower interest rates. Back in 2005, 2006, I remember we were... seven, eight. Some people on subprime loans were getting 9, 10%. So now you mix... So
on a $300,000 home, that's $30,000 a year.
Yeah.
In juice.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was crazy. People were buying homes at the height of the market for, you know, $500,000-$600,000, but then couple that with a 7% rate, now you have really high payments. Where we're at right now, we're still at those high markers, but people are getting 3.8%, 4%. So that's why it still makes sense. The reason why home prices are going to continue to climb is because of the demand. You have more people that are entering into the marketplace and not enough homes. That's the same with the rentals. You know, there's not enough rental properties. The reason why this happened was when the whole market took a break, you know, and it collapsed, they stopped building. Yep. And all the contractors all left. A lot of contractors got out of the trade completely.
You know, I was talking about this was, do you know Matt Sanchez?
I don't.
No, he's a TriCap development. He's an infill developer here in town. I had him on last night.
Yeah.
And, he actually know him through jiu-jitsu. He's a brown belt in jiu-jitsu.
Okay.
That's how I know you're high end, those guys.
Okay.
And he was just saying, like, he can't find a framer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can't find a framer. Wood is through the roof.
Yeah.
You know, and at least from his perspective, the consequence of the environmental review laws is that it sort of restricts the entrance into the market.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it easier for him to make a buck.
Yeah.
He says, you know, you show me environmental review, you show me community input, you know, all these things that make it hard to do business in California. Well, for the guys that are in, that really just kind of like helps us keep our market share.
Yeah.
You know, because you're really restricting entry into the market. So if you really wanted to do something about it, you would just like do like a 5-year moratorium on permits, fees, environmental review, community input, you know, like the ability for a community to slow down a project, although I'm not sure that's necessarily a good thing, but he's saying, you know, drop all these requirements, let the market, you know, we'll overbuild, and then folks will have a choice in housing stock. I'm not exactly sure I believe that, but it's an interesting point, you know, like he, you know, you business guys are so cool. Like he's like, show me an obstacle, show me a review process, show me a new law, I'll show you a way to make money off of it. You know, so I thought that was pretty slick.
Yeah.
You know, so you started buying up houses in 09, 08.
Correct.
$75,000 home, rents for $1,200.
Yeah.
The basic math is pretty good.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, one day I was just sitting in bed and just scrolling through and looking at home prices. And I was just looking in different areas. And I found that house that I was telling you about for $75,000. I'm like, this is crazy. $75,000? I wonder how much these rent for. And that was it. It was $1,200. And that was the first rental property that I had bought. And immediately, I fell in love. Yep. I fell in love with, I became absolutely infatuated with the idea that I can make positive cash flow on these little rental properties. And that was in 2009. I just started buying as many as I possibly could because of the positive cash flow, you know. And then I kind of re-engineered it to where I said, okay, if my mortgage payment on this is $600 and I'm making $1,200 in rent, what if I implied all the $1,200 that I'm getting for rent towards paying off the mortgage, and I could pay the home off in 6 years.
Right.
So then I started doing all the math. How many properties do I need to have the lifestyle that I want to have? And then it really started steamrolling. And I just bought as many little properties as I possibly could in West Sacramento and downtown Midtown. Those were areas that usually when I try to buy a rental property, I try to hit three different angles. I try to buy the property with 20% or more under market value.
Okay. Hey, for folks watching, this isn't time to take out the pen and paper, right?
There you go. Yeah.
So 20% exactly. Under market
value. So
why might a home be 20% under market value?
So it's primarily because it needs a lot of repairs. Okay. I find these deals as off-market deals. They usually come from a referral from a friend or family, or a lot of the times I live in East Sacramento, and I would walk around the East Sacramento Midtown, and I'd find properties that are highly distressed, or a property with a board on the window. And then I use a site called Property Shark to go in and I look that address up.
Find out who owns it.
And I find out who owns it. A lot of the times when I contact these people, they're blown away that I even want that house. And they're like, wait, why do you want that house? That house is garbage. You want to buy it? Sure. How much do you want to buy it? One tip too is don't ever tell somebody how much that you want to buy their house for. Let them tell you how much that they want for it. You'll always get a better deal.
Especially
that
way. If it's distressed that way.
Yeah. So, you know, I started into that model there, buying highly distressed properties that I can buy for at least a 20% discount right off the top. And then I look for areas that I know that are in appreciating markets. And then I look for at least a 20% a bump in what we call sweat equity.
Right.
So once I do the rehab work, I want to make another 20% on the new appreciation. So the majority of the time I hold on to these properties and I just cash flow them. So I hit all three angles, but instead of selling it at the end, I actually rent it out and I keep it.
Okay.
So
what is holding on to a portfolio of properties like that look like? A giant headache, property management, tenants?
Yeah, it is a headache. Just this last year, I had a 3,100 square foot property in a gated community, probably worth $550,000. I had a massive oak tree. I mean, I'm talking this oak tree is huge. And it fell on the house, completely collapsed the roof. And my tenants were inside. They were totally shook up. Yeah. They're fine. They didn't get hurt. But the house, it just in shambles. I have great insurance, though, and They covered it all, but it, huge, crazy headache with that. Just this last Christmas, I had another rental property of mine burn because the tenants plugged in an electronic skateboard. Skateboard caught fire and burned my house. So there's definitely a lot of issues that I deal with, but it's all about having the right people in place, you know, having good property managers. My brother James is... I couldn't do anything without him. You know, he is just a key piece in my business to where he manages all of my rental properties, all of my Airbnb properties. So it is a headache, but if you have the right people in place, that's what you need.
Okay. What does your Airbnb portfolio look like? How does that? The city created some restrictions around using Airbnb.
I was actually on the news. I was the poster child for that.
Yeah. You're the bad guy.
Mm-hmm. So, Airbnb, our city was growing, and I noticed that I had some properties that were in key areas. I didn't realize how many people actually use the convention center in Sacramento.
Oh, yeah.
It's wild. I mean, they have conventions there 3 times a week.
Yeah.
And there's not enough a lot of hotels
right around those properties. Yeah.
Exactly. So I have a fiveplex and a fourplex.
Like in San Diego, like the San Diego Convention, not to cut you off, the San Diego Convention Center, across the street, 10 hotels.
Yeah.
Here?
Yeah. Well, I think we have like two or three. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just not enough to sustain, you know, the amount of people that are now coming into Sacramento. And people are coming in for all sorts of reasons. I mean, I have a lot of people coming in for weddings, people going to Kings games, concerts. I mean, you know, we're getting a lot better performers that are coming to Sacramento now too. And, you know, really people are looking at, okay, do I want to go to Oracle and watch, you know, whoever's coming into town, whatever concert, or I can go to San Jose or Sacramento. So, we have a really cool draw coming in. But basically what had happened was I kind of noticed that niche in the market that, you know, hey, my property is right downtown. And I thought, well, let's test it out and let's see. So I was pleasantly surprised that I was getting about 3 times the rent. And the rent was already really high. So I started buying more properties and turning when tenants' leases were coming up, I would furnish the place and turn it into an Airbnb. And right now we have, I think I have 6 units that are on Airbnb that are downtown.
Around the convention center?
Correct. All down the convention center.
What do you, what do you say to folks that say you're pushing out renters?
Yeah.
You're pushing out members of our community. This is socially sort of unhealthy.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
And I mean, you don't have to respond, you know, I mean, just what are your thoughts? I mean...
So...
I haven't been the first person to ask you this, right?
No, not at all. And some people don't like Airbnb. Some of my tenants are not too pumped that they are sharing, you know, their complex with somebody that Someone is new. Staying for the night.
Yeah.
Some things that I do to kind of, to manage that, you know, because I don't want people that are coming in to party. Unfortunately, you know, Airbnb gets that rap. But here in Sacramento, we don't really have that issue yet.
Yeah.
It's mostly people that are coming to the convention center. But, I mean, you're absolutely right. There is a shortage of housing. And, you know, if more people are doing Airbnb on their properties, then it's less people that can, you know, afford to rent in the city.
So I guess your answer is like, hey, guilty as charged.
It is.
But,
you know.
But also not necessarily your fault. Like, who's going to...
And
who would fault you for making a buck where you can...
I'm providing another service, you know? So there's another side to that.
Yeah.
Where what if you wanted to go to a concert and you couldn't afford to because hotel prices are $500 a night? I mean, the new hotel that they just built... It's $500 a night to stay there. Are you kidding me? $500? So now if you wanted to go to a concert, you're getting pushed out and you can't even explore our city because you can't afford to stay in a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's two sides.
Okay.
But, you know, you're right. It definitely is doing that.
How have the city's new ordinances around Airbnb affected your business model, if at all?
It hasn't too much.
What exactly did they do?
So basically what they did was they implied a hotel tax.
Okay.
So Airbnb takes it out automatically.
That's like 1% or something like that, right?
I think it's like 12.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But they pass that on to the consumer. Airbnb does now. So when they book, it automatically comes off. So it's not even your deal. It's really not.
Okay.
Yeah. But it was kind of a pain before because I had to keep track of how many people were staying, how much money did we earn. So, you know, it's just an added pain in the butt.
Okay. So the hotel tax and that's it?
Pretty much, yeah. And we had to make sure that we advertised that this was an Airbnb house to other tenants, you know, that were in the complex.
And how does that work for the folks in the complex? Like if you... Are there covenants or like HOA rules around the complex saying, hey, you can't use this as a rental property like that?
No, basically what I had to do is I just had to make them aware, and then I had to set specific rules.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I had to go and say, you know, hey, there's no smoking, you know, in front of the unit.
Basic stuff.
Yeah, basic things like that. 10 o'clock, you have to shut it down. It also helps that I have an on-site property manager that manages my complexes, and you know he's got to go over there and deal with complaints and stuff and check people in. So it's more than just it's a lot harder than what you would think. You just put your property up on Airbnb and you're just gonna let it go. You have to have a legitimate business. I mean, we have house cleaners that work on staff.
Yeah.
We have on-site property managers that are catering to these people. So it is a lot of work, but it could be extremely lucrative too.
Okay. So you're holding on to a lot of properties, not to flip them and sell them, but rather to cash flow them and hold on to them.
Correct.
This assumes that there's no downward pressures on rent prices in Sacramento.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it seems like there's not. Again, with my conversation with Matt Sanchez, I was like, sort of, you know, describe the inputs that go into building your units. He sells them, right?
Yeah.
He says, well, it's this, it's this, it's this, it's this. And they're all going up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, is there any downward pressure? He's like, not in the foreseeable future.
There really right? isn't at all.
So rent prices go down, you lose your shirt.
Not necessarily. I don't think they can go down enough because I've already made all that sweat equity.
Okay. So you're good.
That's why that's a part of my model, you know, to protect myself.
Okay.
Even if they go down... They're never going to go down to what my actual payment is.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah. In your view, what's driving rent prices up in Sacramento?
It's not having enough housing.
Okay.
You know, that's everything is all stemmed from that issue.
With the current prices, you know, we just talked to that, I think, for about 20 minutes about how you sort of did pretty well for yourself, right, in the last sort of decade. Now we're in a new environment, right? The prices have sort of doubled in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Where's the money to be made in real estate now?
Hmm.
Going forward.
So my model...
Does your model still hold up for properties currently?
It still does, but you have to find properties that are off market. You can't go and battle with everybody on the open market. You know, if a property hits MLS, it's really tough to be able to find a deal like that. Where I'm finding my deals now are from a friend that says, hey, you know, my aunt just passed away and she left her property to her family estate and she was a hoarder. Property needs a ton of work, but I know that you take on those types of projects.
And you got the cash. We can get out from under it.
Correct. Yep.
Let's
and
go.
Usually when it falls into a trust or situation like that, they're more apt to just get rid of it and get that instant cash. You know what I mean? Because at that point, if it's divided upon five brothers and sisters and everybody takes a haircut of $10,000, but they get their money immediately, but then the person who buys it gets a $50,000 discount, it's a great move for somebody in my position.
Yeah, and also the family doesn't have to figure out who's going to live in it, potentially fight over it.
Fix it up, and they just get to get their inheritance from it immediately and move on. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're, nobody really wants to deal with that. They want it to just be as fast and easy as possible.
Right, right. Well, especially something like that, right? Like,
yeah.
Who wants to... go in and clean out dead mom's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's very painful.
Yeah. And you know, there is still a ton of opportunity in other areas. What I'm starting to do, and I mentioned that I might bring a friend on with me. A good buddy of mine he actually just wrote a book on real estate investing out of state. Okay. And his name's David Green, and phenomenal guy. But basically what he does is he puts the right people in place that are out of state. So he's looking in places like Florida. He's looking in Cincinnati, Detroit. Detroit's another great area. Dan Gilbert, who owns Quicken Loans, is purchasing that, you know, all of downtown Detroit. It's really turning around. But you can buy a property in Detroit for $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 and be able to rent it for $500. Mm-hmm. So you don't see as much appreciation, but it's a great form of cash flow. So, you know, I don't know if I would necessarily build my portfolio for cash flow here
anymore.
You know, anymore. It's a lot harder to find those deals, but there is a lot of opportunity out there. You just got to kind of look for it. And
I heard some investors are moving down to Stockton.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, basically the model is you find areas where this basic math is still working out.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Or you can find properties that are in areas that you deem as being up and coming. And how you do that is you follow commercial guys. You know, if you know, one of the things that I started buying in Alkali Flats in downtown, and really that was back before the arena was in and it was 100%. But if you knew that, if you followed some of my friends like Ethan Conrad, he'd be able to provide you with a lot of information, right? He's number one commercial developer in all of California, right? So you go to Ethan and you say, hey, Ethan, what are some things that that you can tell me about the Sacramento surrounding area that are going to be coming in the future? And he says, oh, man, look, you know, we have all these development plans over here. If you know that ahead of time...
It's almost like insider trading.
It almost is. Yeah. But really, it's all public knowledge. You can go down and find out, you know, what the plans for the city are, you know?
Right. You just have to be tuned in.
Exactly. You got to be tuned in. You got to go to the right people. You got to go down to the city and find out what permits have been filed. But if you know that information, that's a great way to start investing around those areas prior to something coming in.
Okay.
So good buy and hold techniques.
You ever have a deal go south on you?
I have a deal right now in Incline. So, you know, I'm kind of searching for those areas. Incline in Nevada.
Okay.
Incline Village. Village.
Okay. Yep. Tahoe. Yeah.
Tahoe.
Okay.
Yep. So I was looking for a property that I wanted to vacation rent out and... Maybe and that I can keep. Yeah. So we love Incline. I have a growing family, so we're looking to purchase an Incline. So it took me about 2 years to finally find this house. I bought it from an 87-year-old man that
his ex-son-in-law off market.
Correct. His ex-son-in-law lived there for like 15 years and then he decided not to pay rent anymore. He thought this old guy's not going to lay the hammer down on me.
Yeah.
And the guy did. He hired an attorney and he kicked the guy out. The guy got pissed off and he ripped all the carpets out and just destroyed this cabin. But for me, I would rather buy the cabin.
You're like perfect.
Yeah, exactly. To put it in the worst condition possible because I'm going to redo the whole place anyways.
Help you mess it up.
Exactly. So I ended up buying it just super undervalue, but with the shortage of contractors... I got ripped off two times already. So the first contractor that I hired, he went in and he bid the project too low. And instead of hiring a legit tile guy to come in and do the tile work, he decided how hard could it be to do tile. Put up the YouTube video.
There's math involved. There's like math and geometry involved.
There is. It's not easy. That's an actual craft.
I got a funny story about that. Yeah.
So he just tried to wing it. And he didn't even put weatherproofing down or anything. I mean, he totally destroyed three of my bathrooms. So that me being, you know, all the way down here in Sacramento, I'm not driving up there and checking on him every day. And he knows that. But then when I finally do, I'm like, what did you do? Yeah. And I mean, he laid my floors too. And he was supposed to hire an actual flooring contractor. He didn't. He tried to do them himself. And there's all these gaps everywhere, and he just completely messed everything up. So I ended up having to...
That's out of your pocket.
Yep. And then I go and I hire the next guy to come in. And, you know, like I said, there's a shortage on contractors. So, you know, people...
Especially in Tahoe, right?
Yeah, in Tahoe. I mean, these guys, they call it being on Tahoe time. They're not, you know, they live in Tahoe for a reason. They're hanging out, you know... It's just they don't have the best work ethic.
They're anonymous up there.
Next guy I come and hires on. He comes out to the job, realizes that he bit off more than he can chew, and he just takes off with my money.
Oh wow.
So
any effort to retrieve that?
Oh yeah, I mean, well basically the first guy we had to turn into the contractor board, so that's no fun. And then the second guy who just blatantly ripped us off, he literally just stole my money. So, you know, you give the first draw, here's the first draw, go buy your materials and get started on the project. He just took off and was like, sorry.
At that point, is that a criminal complaint at that point?
Oh yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And, so we had to file a police report and, you know, on that guy, and he basically just stole from us. So now I have some good contractors, but you know, it's tough and those types of things happen. So, I've definitely had my fair share of projects go sideways. As far as the...
Get a lot of that when you're first starting?
You do, but you learn from everything. You know, I mean, sometimes I call it paying tuition.
Yeah,
I'm just paying tuition, learning.
So for the most part, you're not in there doing the sweat equity yourself?
No. Sometimes I'll do some things like pressure wash a fence, you know.
That's fun.
But yeah. Or just to feel like you're involved, but... For the most part, I don't do any of the work.
Right. Why would you? That's not your competency.
It's not. Okay. Yeah. Leave it to the pros.
Cool. So you're really just sort of adding up the, you know, hopefully a fair accounting of what this is actually going to cost.
Yeah.
Doing the math before you get started. It's like, hey, there's a dollar to be made here.
Yep.
Yeah.
And just analyzing different areas. And a lot of the time, I'm not the expert. You know what I mean? Sure, I'm in real estate. I own a mortgage company. I'm competent, but... I'm not a pro at knowing what rents are going to be.
Yeah.
So I go and I find some of the best property managers that directly work in that area.
Right.
And then at that point, I rely on their information for me. And then I do the same with contractors and everything else, you know.
So what happened with the house in Inclined Village?
It's still going.
Yeah. Are you getting a third contractor?
I do. I have it lined up and... I have to commit to doing weekly visits to Incline Village to make sure that everything's going smooth.
Hey.
And it's all right. Yeah. I'm definitely going to miss the winter season though. So
yeah,
that's a bummer.
So talk to us a little bit about your mortgage company.
So my mortgage company is United Wholesale Lending. I just sold half of my company. I sold all of my Bay Area branches to focus more on our Sacramento market. We have offices that span from Yuba City all the way down to Elk Grove. And we specialize in residential financing. And we're actually on the wholesale side of lending. So we're a wholesale broker.
So what does that mean? That means I don't go to you for, like, an individual buyer doesn't come to you.
No, you do.
You do.
That's exactly who we deal with. Okay. So it's individual buyers, but we have wholesale rates.
Okay.
So traditionally how it works is you have wholesale rates, and then you have these direct lenders that are actually marking up those interest rates.
Got it.
So there's a huge misconception in the industry because people think, you know, oh, I need to go with a direct lender, or they don't understand what the difference is between wholesale, a direct lender, or a retail bank, and those interest rates are actually bumped up. So if you were to purchase a home and you actually qualified for a 3.875, the owner of that direct lending mortgage company would actually bump those rates up for his own, you know, benefit.
Right, that's his.
And his guys would actually be selling, instead of the 3.8, they're selling a 4.2. And the consumer has no idea. And those, so that's how it works.
Those basis points is
they're padding those basis points.
Okay. And that's where they make their money.
Correct. That's where they make their money. Okay. And you know, that's how they can afford to have, you know, big offices and a lot of advertising dollars.
Yeah. So for folks listening, say, you know, I want to get into the home ownership. It's, you know, still the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
What do folks need to get together to get ready to buy their first home?
So
I then give you a call.
Yeah. Right. So basically, what people really need to do is you need to consult a mortgage professional up front. Usually what they do that's common practice is you wait until you find a house that you like, because you could do a lot of research on your own right now. And people will go on and they'll look at homes and they kind of hold off for a while until they find a home that they like. And then they reach out to a real estate agent. Really, we need to reverse that whole, the way that process
works. Start with the mortgage guy.
You need to start with the mortgage guy. You want to go in and you want to find out what you can afford. You want to find out if there's anything on your credit report that maybe we can take care of beforehand, before you fall in love with that house that you absolutely have to have. We want to put you in the best buying position. So you're going to want to complete the online application. We're going to go over your credit report together, look for any inaccuracies. That's probably the most important part. I mean, you just saw what happened with Equifax.
Yeah.
You know, there's that big breach that happened, and there's a lot of things that are appearing on your credit report or that are dragging down your score, where we can take care of that and we can get you into a better buying position. And that might mean a lower interest rate, which will result in a lower monthly payment. It might result in the difference between you having to go with an FHA loan versus a conventional loan. FHA loan is going to cost you a lot more money in the long haul.
Yeah.
So that's what you want to do. You want to fill out the online application. We'll go over your credit report together. You're going to gather up your last 2 years of income taxes, your bank statements, your pay stubs, and we're going to analyze all of that information together, tell you what you can afford, and then you're going to reach out to a real estate professional and go look at homes.
Very cool. Very cool. I just wanted to get that out there for folks who might want to be making the jump, right?
Yeah.
Is this a good time to buy still?
It is. Okay. It is. It's a great time to buy. I think that the market's going to continue to appreciate. You're not going to be throwing away your money to rent. And everyone would benefit from owning a home.
Right. Okay. We're getting close to an hour here.
This cool. Kind of flew by.
Yeah. Your advice to young entrepreneurs in Sacramento?
Find a good mentor. You know, that's really what it's all about. And just believe in yourself. Anyone can do it. There's no special background that you need to have or anything like that. I always encourage people to reach out to me, and I can point you in the right directions. And there's a million ways to make a buck or to get better or to invest. I mean, I have some friends right now that are making some good money in Bitcoin. So,
what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that first off, you never risk more than you can afford to lose, you know. But there is some good opportunity. There's great technology there, and you know, we don't have a crystal ball, but if you feel confident in the technology, it's definitely worth researching and putting some feelers out there, because if it does stick, then you know, one day you might be pretty fortunate if you invested in one of those Bitcoins.
Yeah. All right, brother, where can folks find you on social media?
Social media. You can find me either on United Wholesale Lending or my personal page under Shelby Elias. It's a great way to connect with me on Facebook or Instagram. My Instagram name is Take Risk, the number 4, Success.
Take Risk for Success.
There you go.
Shelby, if you were a character, I couldn't write you any better, brother. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.